Herodias by Gustave Flaubert. Chapter 1. In the eastern side of the Dead Sea rose the citadel of Machaerus. It was built upon a conical peak of basalt and was surrounded by four deep valleys, one on each side, another in front, and the fourth in the rear. At the base of the citadel, crowding against one another, a group of houses stood within the circle of a wall, whose outlines undulated with the unevenness of the soil. A zigzag road, cutting through the rocks, joined the city to the fortress, the walls of which were about 120 cubits high, having numerous angles and ornamental towers that stood out like jewels in this crown of stone overhanging an abyss. Within the high walls stood a palace, adorned with many richly carved arches and surrounded by a terrace that on one side of the building spread out below a wide balcony made of sycamore wood, upon which tall poles had been erected to support an awning. One morning, just before sunrise, the tetrarch, Herod Antipas, came out alone upon the balcony. He leaned against one of the columns and looked about him. The crests of the hilltops in the valley below the palace were just discernible in the light of the false dawn, although their bases, extending to the abyss, were still plunged in darkness. A light mist floated in the air. Presently it lifted, and the shores of the Dead Sea became visible. The sun, rising behind Machaerus, spread a rosy flush over the sky, lighting up the stony shores, the hills, and the desert, and illuming the distant mountains of Judea, rugged and gray in the early dawn. Engedi, the central point of the group, threw a deep black shadow. Hebron, in the background, was round-topped like a dome. Eshol had her pomegranates, Sorek her vineyards, Carmel her fields of sesame, and the Tower of Antonia, with its enormous cube, dominated Jerusalem. The tetrarch turned his gaze from it to contemplate the palms of Jericho on his right, and his thoughts dwelt upon other cities of his beloved Galilee, Capernaum, Endu, Nazareth, Tiberias. Whither it might be, he would never return. The Jordan wound its way through the arid plains that met his gaze. White and glittering under the clear sky, it dazzled the eye like snow in the rays of the sun. The Dead Sea now looked like a sheet of lapis lazuli, and at its southern extremity, on the coast of Yemen, Antipas recognized clearly what at first he had been able only dimly to perceive. Several tents could now be plainly seen. Men carrying spears were moving about among a group of horses, and dying campfires shone faintly in the beams of the rising sun. This was a troop belonging to the Sheikh of the Arabs, the daughter of whom the tetrarch had repudiated in order to wed Herodias, already married to one of his brothers, who lived in Italy, but who had no pretensions to power. Antipas was waiting for assistance and reinforcements from the Romans, but as Vitellius, the governor of Syria, had not yet arrived, he was consumed with impatience and anxiety. Perhaps Agrippa had ruined his cause with the emperor, he thought. Philip, his third brother, sovereign of Bithynia, was arming himself clandestinely. The Jews were becoming intolerant of the tetrarch's idolatries. He knew that many were weary of his rule, and he hesitated now between adopting one of two projects, to conciliate the Arabs and win back their allegiance, or to conclude an alliance with the Parthians. Under the pretext of celebrating his birthday, he had planned to bring together, at a grand banquet, the chiefs of his troops, the stewards of his domains, and the most important men from the region about Galilee. Antipas threw a keen glance along all the roads leading to Machaerus. They were deserted. Eagles were sweeping through the air high above his head. The soldiers of the guard, placed at intervals along the ramparts, slept or dozed, leaning against the walls. All was silent within the castle. Suddenly, he heard the sound of a distant voice, seeming to come from the very depths of the earth. His cheek paled. After an instant's hesitation, he leaned far over the balcony railing, listening intently, but the voice had died away. Presently it rose again upon the quiet air. Antipas clapped his hands together loudly, crying, "Menneus! Menneus!" Instantly a man appeared, naked to the waist, after the fashion of a masseur at the bath. Although emaciated and somewhat advanced in years, he was a giant in stature, and on his hip he wore a cutlass in a bronze scabbard. His bushy hair, gathered up and held in place by a kind of comb, exaggerated the apparent size of his massive head. His eyes were heavy with sleep, but his white teeth shone, his step was light on the flagstones, and his body had the suppleness of an ape, although his countenance was as impassive as that of a mummy. "Where is he?" demanded the tetrarch of this strange being. Menenius made a movement over his shoulder with his thumb, saying, "Over there, still."